actually here in the beginning, the first paragraph. I'd like to take a few of the mois and put them together just to flesh out a little bit what's going on over here. In other words, there's two basic psukim at the beginning. There's Yishokeinim Yishikos Piyu Ki Tovim Dodecho Miyoyin. And then the next one is the fourth post, so that's the second. Moshcheni Acharecho Narutzo Heviyani HaMelech Hadorov Nagilov Nismecho Boch Azkir Dodecho Miyayin Meishoim Aivucha. Okay, so normally what we do is we read the Moshel and the Nimshel. I'd like to, though, take the just the like an abstract, the Misholim from both, and you know, contrast them together and see what theme or what insight comes out of it. Moshel on Yishokeinim Yishikos Piyu Ki Tovim Dodecho Miyayin. So that's in the second pasuk. If you look at Rashi. If you look at the end of the Rashi, by Posuk Beis, the end of the Rashi, V'ne'emar dugmo sheloi, Posuk Beis, the end of the Rashi, the Rashi discusses, ki tovim dodecho miyayin, it explains the moshel, in other words, in terms of wine, and in terms of the melech, and so forth, but then it says, V'ne'emar dugmo sheloi. Dugmo means that this moshel of the chosen and kala, of the melech, and this refers to this particular situation. He gave them the Torah and he spoke to them face to face. This is a very, very serious encounter. What?
That's an expression used by Moshe Rabbeinu.
Okay, it could be, but this is Shem Shenoslem Terosa Vdibri Moin Ponim El Ponim. V'oisom Doidim Oidom Arevim Aleim Mikol Shashua. Now listen to this. We discussed this in brief, but just we're reading it inside. The Shokeinim Shika Ispiu Ki Toim Doidecho Miyoyim, that posuk in the Nimshol, the dugma is, he says, Al Shem Shenoslem Terosa. Hashem gave us at Har Sinai the Torah. And he spoke directly. And by the way, both the Tur and in the Ralbag, it's accentuated. The Tur says that when you make Birchas HaTorah, you think Shabocha Bonim Mikolo Umim, Shabocha Bonim Mikolo Amim, the Kervonu Lifnei Har Sinai, such a lashon. He says he spoke directly to us. The appreciation of the directness of it is something that's very, very unique, because what it does is it gives us that sense of total confidence. For example, if someone were to write a letter, you know, I come from a different world, you know, your generation, I don't even know if the United States Postal Service works anymore. I heard rumor that they're going to cut it out. It's all going to be email and texting and all this other stuff. But Lamaisa, what's that? Okay, maybe. But I heard they're using drones for that. They're not even use UPS. But that's besides the point. But v'dibre mo'im ponim el ponim. So he says, but imagine that you have a delicate, romantic communication. So it's very nice. You have a letter, you know. Read it, and I make the joke, you know, I make fun of it, how they read the love letters, you know, this way, then they turn upside down, they turn up to here, then, you know, because you're very interested in seeing all of the innuendo and what's hinted in there. But the truth of the matter is, a letter can never do what? Right? Anyone who knows in dating, a telephone date doesn't do what a face-to-face, you know, ponim el ponim. Ponim el ponim is a different relationship. There's a limit.
So when you try to, like, call a company, you want to get to, like, the top, or you want to reach somebody, you always try to get to, like, the top. Like, you don't want to
even at the top, for example, I have a cloud like this. I say, informational conversation can be done over the phone, or even a text. Anytime you want to influence someone, or you want to read someone's involvement, that you need ponim el ponim. So the fact that Hashem appeared to us ponim el ponim cemented a relationship. He could have said, okay, he could have done like this. He could have said, I'm appointing Moshe Rabbeinu. Here, you know Moshe Rabbeinu. We have to know, in order to know that Moshe is the authority, let Moshe teach you the whole thing. But there was this ponim el ponim, which means it created a relationship. It's we have a personal relationship, a very significant concept. So he nosalem terosa v'dibri moim ponim el ponim v'oisam doidim, and that ponim el ponim created a loving relationship. Doidim is a loving relationship. It created v'oisam doidim oidim arevim aleim mikol shashua. They're still more pleasant to them than any pleasure. And what does that mean? What that means, l'chayra, is that that relationship, which was forged at Har Sinai, is still today to me more pleasant than any delight, than any pleasure that I have. Now I ask you, is that true?
No.
Do you remember that thing? Is it a conscious memory? Do you really understand that memory to the extent that it's real in your life, that you feel it? Terence says it's not conscious. It must be subconscious. It can't be conscious because it's not conscious, because nobody here remembers. Do you remember?
Sleeping.
You're very exceptional. You're very exceptional. You know what I mean? Anyway, but nobody remembers. But the Terence says, if oisam doidim oidim areva aleim mikol shashua, it must mean that the subconscious memory is still more pleasant than any conscious and real-time experience that they experience. No matter what I have, no matter what pleasure, no matter what delight that I have in this world today, that memory, that subconscious memory, it's compared to that. Now, the truth of the matter is, I mean, explain this. I mean, this can be very easily understood. Because let's say, for example, you had this amazing steak that you never had before in your life. It was, I don't know, whatever. Okay? Now, you years later, or days later, or weeks later, or months later, or years later, you're eating and you're eating more and more. And it's just not the same. You're not consciously thinking, oh, it's not exactly like that one that I had 10 years ago. But the 10 years ago set a standard, right? That set a standard. This is what a good steak is like. Therefore, nothing compares to that. The same thing. The experience at Maimon Har Sinai, that dibur pe'el peh, that expression of Hashem's love to Klal Yisrael, that He's giving them the Torah, and He's speaking directly, and He's forging a direct relationship with them, that left such a pleasurable memory, that memory is deeply entrenched in the subconscious.
You're saying that's like a steak?
The steak was just we should have an example for us. But what it is there's a memory there that doesn't let me enjoy anything else. Why? Because everything in the real world I compare to that subconscious memory. Now, the comparison doesn't have to be, that's why I mentioned the steak. It doesn't have to be that, oh, I remember that steak, and now this is not like that. Well, let's check it off.
Isn't that unhealthy?
We're not discussing health or not. We're discussing the reality. The reality is, what's unhealthy about it is, and it's also the same thing that's very healthy, what's unhealthy about it is we can't enjoy life. This is why we can't enjoy life.
Right, but isn't it like, I always thought it's like, if it's the opposite, meaning the first time is never going to be as great as like the 15th time, because every time you have a greater appreciation.
Not in physical pleasure, no. Spiritual pleasure. Not physical pleasure, just the opposite.
People forget, so I'm saying.
Forget what?
You'll have a good steak, you'll remember your first one, but every single time you have one afterwards, you get a liking to it, meaning it builds.
No, it works just the opposite. Your mamish, test it out. Pay attention. Just the opposite. The first time, it's like the story I tell with my pina colada, that the first time I was introduced to that drink, I liked it, it was very good, and alcohol too. Anyway, and then the next, then I was someplace, so that was in Sarah's in Miami, and then I'm someplace else at some simcha something, and my wife says, always such a good influence. Anyway, maybe you want a pina colada. So I said, yeah, sure. I said, they don't know how to make pina colada. We went someplace else. They don't know how to make pina colada. No, but no. Then we go back to Sarah 2 years later, and I see, first thing I ordered is pina colada. Sarah doesn't know how to make pina colada.
It wasn't as good as the first time.
What?
Was it the same bartender?
the first time it was a new pleasure.
The second time,
two things. Yeah, this is very important psychologically. Two things happen. The second time it happens as follows. Number one, listen to this. You've dulled the senses because physical senses get dulled by pleasure. You had it once already. It's more trite. I'm used to it.
The whole thing is the freshness, the excitement,
the newness. That's number one. And number two, wait. But they forget. But in the meantime, that pleasure has been dulled, whether they remember it or not. But there's that the excitement is not there.
Right.
Let me finish. Number two, the memory plays games on us. The memory makes physical pleasures greater than they were. Why? It's very simple. Because a physical pleasure is a frustrating experience because it's enjoyable at this moment and then it's gone. So I have to have a memory that says, it was very good. Oh, yes. And if the memory starts to exaggerate it because it's waning, it wasn't anything to begin with. The minute it's over, it's all over. So I have to now remember it and to build it up in order to have a little bit pleasure out of that fleeting pleasure that left me so fast. So I end up, I've exaggerated it in my mind. Next time, when I have the pleasure, I'm going Tartel Reyes. The senses have been dulled because that's what happens, physical pleasure. The second time
is not
the
same time.
Let me finish. 1 second. The second, you don't. Anyway, listen like this. The second thing is, not only has the pleasure been dulled, but the memory is greater. So now this new steak or this new drink or this new pina colada is competing with a memory far greater than the reality was. I can't win. It's impossible. That's all in physical pleasures. In physical pleasures, and like this, in spiritual pleasures, it's different. In spiritual pleasures, that's where you develop the sensitivity and you become the first time, and you elevate yourself. I feel better about myself. I'm on a higher level. Then the next one brings me to a higher level, then a higher level. And that level remains. And even if I don't even think about it, but anything meaningful in my life has elevated my sense of self-worth, has elevated my sense of validity, have elevated my sense of self, and therefore I'm on a higher level, and now I can appreciate things more. So the spiritual pleasure...
Right, but why was Harsinai... But Harsinai was a spiritual event.
Let me just finish. So now there's one more nakuda now. Now it comes like this. What about the competition between the physical and the spiritual? So like this. When you experience the ultimate spiritual pleasure, okay, now no physical pleasure can compete with that because you experience something real. Imagine that. I experience the Yishokeini Meshikaispio. I experience the Creator expressing His intimate love for me, not giving me a directive, not giving me a book, not giving me a speech through a shliach, not sending me a letter, but directly per el per and Kineshika ispiu. That's what Rashi explains it like it's mamish a passionate kiss, and that's what I experienced. Once I had that spiritual experience, that depth of connection with Hashem, that created an experience of pleasure that's not shaykh. That was the total pleasure. That's the pleasure not just of the goof, which is the house, the base for the neshama. That's the neshama. That's the essence of the person. Experience that pleasure. That pleasure remains, and even though I may not remember it, may have forgotten it, or it never was part of my conscious memory, I wasn't really there, it was only my neshama that was there, but it was indelibly imprinted upon my neshama. And since it was indelibly imprinted upon my neshama, it remains there. Now, every pleasure in life is compared subconsciously to that. Not that I think, let's think, how did I feel at Har Sinai? Now, how do I feel about this drink, about this steak, about this thing, about this... But it's because it set the standard. It set a standard of thrill, of excitement, of pleasure, of shashua, of delight that can't be competed with. Because nothing in the physical world can compete with that level of pleasure. Memela, since it can't compete with that level of pleasure, there was nothing there. There's nothing. So now all the pleasures, that's why Jews are the most frustrated people when it comes to eating, when it comes to drinking, when it comes to drugging, when it comes to cold divorce. Why? Because they never have enough. They're the leaders. They don't just join the Communist Party. They form the Communist Party. They're going to correct society. They're going to have the privilege of social. The Jewish socialists was the biggest thing in the 1920s and 30s. They were like we're going to reform. Society is going to be a better place. He's always at the head. And they're exaggerating. They're extreme in everything. And in pleasure, we know that. When it comes to any of the vices, when the Jew gets involved, why? Because he has so much more to compete with. He's fighting a memory, a subconscious memory that no matter how much physical pleasure, whether it's physical, whether it's emotional, whether it's political, or whatever it may be, but it can't satisfy him. It doesn't do anything to satisfy him. And Mela, he can't enjoy it. So that's what he says is happening. He says, "V'oysam doidim," that expression of love that Hashem expressed at Har Sinai to Klal Yisroel, with his pale, when he spoke to us directly, oydim arev nale mikol shashua, they're still more pleasant than any delight. Now, it's not conscious, but subconsciously, that pleasure sets a standard that no delight can compete with. No physical pleasure, not even the spiritual pleasure, because the spiritual pleasure is also not as high, so nothing can compete with it.
But
umuvtochi meitoi, and they are promised, assured by him, lohifia oyd aleim levoyer lehem soy tameh umistetz v'leseho, and they are promised by Hashem that he will, and there's a promise that he will appear to them again and explain to them the secrets of the reasons and the hidden the mysteries of the Torah. And they're awaiting his face. They translate it to mean that they're beseeching him, but we'll discuss that in a minute, that he should be mekayim his word. It seems that there was a word in the original Hebrew that said, I will always reveal the Torah to you. Now, I don't know whether that's because the Torah says, let's see, shochach mi pizaroi, because the Torah will never be forgotten, and therefore we're awaiting him to always reveal to us the secrets of the Torah, ki Hashem yiten chochmo mi piv dasu sfino, or whether it was, and maybe it's more likely, that the promise lay in something else. You know, there are certain relationships which are so deep. The kesher is so inseparable. It's cemented. It's like forever. It can't be breached. And therefore, they're still awaiting that Hashem will continue to reveal the Torah to us, even though we went into Golus, because the nature of the relationship was so deep that it could never be broken. And even if there's a temporary asking a person to leave, it's sent into exile, but we know it's only temporary. Because that bond, when he connected with us at our Sinai, when he spoke to us peh-el-peh, and when he revealed to us the Torah, we know that in that bond was the ultimate expression of an eternal connection. And therefore we await. We know that he's going to continue to reveal the Torah to us, and we machalim ponov lekayim dvorei, and we're awaiting. In other words, it's in the sense of we're just standing here, and yachel yichul is a lotion of waiting. It's like it's a form of hoping. It's a form of assuming it's going to happen. We're just waiting for it to happen. Yachel Yisrael el Hashem. We're waiting. Why are we waiting? Because that experience that we experienced at Har Sinai was so deep that it expressed an eternity. I saw once in the Targum on the Shir HaShirim they compare it like that Hashem gave us a ksuba. Ksuba is a document that's my responsibilities forever. If I send you out, I still have the responsibility. I still have to pay the ksuba. So it's like it was a permanent relationship that was made. Imagine that. So now let's just step back a moment and imagine that. What we're up against in enjoying this world. We have an experience that's incomparable. That we express ponim el ponim divir Hashem, the most intimate of romantic, of loving expression that Hashem appeared to us and spoke to us. And in the speaking to us, it wasn't speaking to us, hey, how you doing? Whatever. But it was giving us his Torah. Giving us the Torah, this, the Torah, the yesod, the purpose, the blueprint, the koyach of Maisa Bereshis, it gave to us. Something he gave to Klal Yisrael. And he gave it in the most intimate, loving way. In a way that remains eternally etched in our memory. And it was an eternal relationship that it's ke'ilu, he promised, I'll never forsake you. And don't be fooled by the golos. And don't be fooled by the hester ponim. Don't be fooled by the fact that you can't find me so easily, and it seems I'm not paying attention to you, and so forth and so on. Don't be fooled by anything. Why? Because that relationship is there. So imagine, we have this experience of such intimate love, which is etched in our memory, which is an eternal expression of love. And now, we're trying to oidam de oidam arev malei mikol shashua. Now we're trying, now let's have a little pleasure. What would you like? A steak? Okay. How about Boston cream pie? Strawberry shortcake? What's your favorite? What ice cream? What used to be? Ice cream sundae? I'm trying to think. I don't know what you guys have today. I know what you guys have today. Anyway, the kids are, but whatever you may be, but it's nothing. It doesn't do it for me. Why? Because in here is an eternal pleasure that's etched in eternity in my memory, whether I remember it or not, and subconsciously, every pleasure that I have, I filter through that memory to say, I don't even realize it. All I realize is the frustration. So now what happens is, b'shas ma'isa, so I try to fool myself. But then it's over. It's over, so the frustration sets in. This pleasure lingers. This pleasure is eternal. This pleasure I still feel. And even though it's a subconscious level, but it's elevated me and it's made its mark and I remain elevated by it. And this pleasure is no good. Okay, so now what I try to do, I try to remember. I'll never forget, I must have said this over here. I remember once as a kid hearing Mabel and Sadie. That's what the old ladies used to be called in my day. Mabel and Sadie. They had just come back from Atlantic City. And they were convincing each other what a fabulous time we had. Mabel, wasn't that the most fabulous time we ever had? And Sadie says, yeah, and it was nothing like it. It was the greatest experience. Oh, wow, what a time. What a good time. And I thought to myself, I must have been 12 years old. I don't know exactly. And I said, why are they talking it into themselves? What? You had a good time. You're showing good. Okay, move on. Get on with your life. The terrace is because it's over. And it leaves nothing. Maybe I'm saying we're Jewish. Those are Jewish ladies' names. English Jewish ladies' names. We have nothing.
You do the same thing, though. You convince everybody that they really enjoy the ruchnias.
Ruchnias, it's real.
You talk it into
what
it.
It's like this. Sometimes people compare the pleasures. I don't have to convince anyone that pleasure is frustrating. I don't. All I have to do is say, pleasure is frustrating because you have it. It's great. It's over.
But ruchnis is also pleasure.
Ruchnis is not frustrating because ruchnis. What ruchnis does is it uplifts you. It's like I said. Like I once told a kid once asked me. I said, ruchnias lasts. He says, physical pleasure, even when you remember it, you don't get anything out. Oh, I remember that drink that I had last week. I remember that dessert I had. I remember the breakfast I had 10 minutes ago. That was such a breakfast to begin with. But anyway, so like, what's going on in this? I say to Charles like this. In ruchnias, in physical things, even when you remember, when you force yourself and say, yeah, let's think about that drink. Let's think about that steak. Okay, now, so I'm thinking about it. So even then,
gives you pleasure.
It doesn't give you pleasure. It's a memory. You can't smell it. You can't touch it. You can't taste it. It can't fit your stomach. Your stomach is still growling from hunger from the steak you ate yesterday. It's nothing. But let's assume, okay, you're trying to remember that. You know the only way you can get a little bit of squeeze a little bit of pleasure out of it is by magnifying it, saying, oh, it was really greater than it was. So we magnify physical pleasures even greater than they were. Now, once I magnify the pleasure, now what do I have to do? But still not enough. I'm still hungry. I'm still thirsting for that steak or thirsty for that drink. So what do I have to do? So now I have to magnify it. And after I finish magnifying it, it still doesn't satisfy. I have to get another one. Now, when I take another one, I am so messed up. Why? Because number one, the senses, the physical senses, dull each time because, as you pointed out very wisely, part of the physical pleasure is the uniqueness. It's special. It's new.
So the last bite of the steak isn't as good as the first bite.
What's that? That's right. Sure.
No, the last bite,
for
the
sure.
Best bite.
No.
What do you mean?
The first time you dig into the steak, it's amazing.
Come on, by the end already you're sick. Listen,
I can't finish my steak.
Wait. Listen. I know maybe you saved the well done piece for the end, but if they're all the same quality.
Well done's not good.
What?
Rare is the.
Okay, so whatever, you save the rare. Anyway, rare and raw to me are the same thing. Okay, but gets like this, yeah. So now, but now you have something else. Now I the memory didn't help, so I start to take it. I took more, and now I the pleasure is the sense buds are dulled because I've had this already. But worse than that, I'm comparing it to the exaggerated memory of what was. So I can't even compare it to the realistic memory of what was. Because I had to exaggerate that memory in order to temporarily satisfy myself. All because I'm fighting against my Menar Sinai. Because there's a pleasure deeply etched in the depths of my psyche that doesn't let me enjoy anything else because it compares it to this matzah. Okay, now, let's say a spiritual pleasure. So a spiritual pleasure is like this. So she said, same thing. What do you mean? If you don't think of it, you're not going to have it. I had a spiritual pleasure 2 weeks ago, and now I don't have it anymore. Number one. Number two, so I say like this. You don't have to think of it. What? What's a spiritual pleasure? Anything. Learning, doing a mitzvah, doing a chesed. I davened well. I felt a surge of bitochen in Hashem. I who knows what?
We say tefillin?
What?
Good from
anything. What?
Filling.
Anything, yeah, whatever. I had something spiritual. Wait, but listen to this. Let me finish. But the spiritual pleasure of the pshat is like this. Not only, it's true that I may have forgotten it, but the spiritual pleasure elevated me. I now feel better about myself. Every time a person's happiness really is totally in his sense of osher, in the sense of feeling good about himself. When I had a spiritual pleasure, it uplifted me. So all of a sudden, I became from a 2 to a 3. Now, for the rest of my life, unless I do stupid things to eradicate it, but for the rest of my life, I'm on a level of 3 now. Therefore, I feel better. So every spiritual pleasure doesn't just leave a memory. It elevates me. That's I'm a different person now. And that's part of, I assume, how this works too. Because of the pleasure in our Sinai, Klal Yisrael was elevated to a different level. So we have this higher standard. Now the physical pleasure, if I remember it, doesn't do anything for me. And especially since the senses have been dulled. And especially since I've exaggerated the memory. But over here, I don't even have to remember it because I'm a greater person now. I feel better about myself. I'm an elevated person. It's a whole different story. Anyway, Rabbi Yisai, this is the reason why all of the physical pleasures in the world can't satisfy, and that's what Rashi says. V'oysom doidim oidim areven aleim mikol shashua. Yeah? But, mikol shashua, that's not enough for us. We want more. And we have this haftoch. We know Hashem is going to reveal Himself again to reveal to us all of this. And we're awaiting that. So here we are. We're in the highest state of spiritual pleasure. We have so much spiritual pleasure that we've experienced and that we have etched in our subconscious memory that it doesn't allow us to enjoy the physical world. But that's not enough for us. We're waiting. We're saying Yishokeinim Shika Ispiu Kitoim Doidechom Yoyin. Because of this, the realization that we have that the spiritual pleasure was so great that thousands of years later it's still interfering with our ability to enjoy anything else. Now we say to you, you promised us that you're going to reveal yourself again. You promised us that the Torah will never be forgotten. You promised us that you're going to maintain that relationship. We're waiting more and more. This is what Klal Yisrael craves, for that connection with Hashem, because it enhances that already deeply buried sense of relationship that we have at Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that, Rabbi says, what I believe happens in the process of Kiruv, and that's what happens, I believe, in the process of everybody growing. When you meet a Jew, then it's true. On the one hand, he has resistance, because the Yetzer Hara works the fight, and he can fight all kinds of things. And we discussed that a little bit over Yom Tov. But on the other hand, besides the whole fight, is that craving. I want it. Because deep down, I have that memory of how pleasurable it was. Deep down, I know that that's what's been frustrating me from the ability to enjoy anything and everything in life. And Mela, I crave that, that pleasure should be once again enhanced. And that's what Rashi says at the end. After that, and after there's another speech which we'll have to make next time, but after that he says, Mishtah Shim Batoira, we delight in the Torah, and the Shom Maskirim Doid of Miyayin. There we relive it. I guess it becomes a conscious memory. When a person learns, so it brings to fore that subconscious memory, and now we, I'm connecting to Hashem. For that, one has to say Birchas HaTorah. I told you, I mentioned here before that Barry Septimus, where's what's his name? It's his great uncle. Ellie. Anyway, he told me that he remembers when Simcha Wasserman, who was like a pioneer in Kirov on the West Coast, used to go to Santa Barbara to give a Chumash class to flyer people, no shaykhs. Women sitting there, not properly dressed, nothing. Yeah, no shaykhs, the Yiddish guy. Today, a whole group of Bali Tshuva. But anyway, he used to start learning Chumash with them. But first, he made them make Birchas HaTorah. All these people are sitting there, I assume the ladies were, making Birchas HaTorah. Because if you appreciate that this is the Torah, Shebocha, Bonu, Mikolo, Amim, Venosa, Nono, Esterosai, now we can begin the process of reconnecting with that memory and that the memory deeply buried and the craving for it that still exists and the frustration of not having anything else that ever satisfied opens up the person that they're ready to be makabel again and again. And that's the secret of the ability to reach Jews.